So at the bottom, the last line on Kof Zayin Omer Aleph, the Mishnah. Shofar Shenizdak. Shofar Shenizdak Vidibko Pasul. If your shofar is cracked, which may mean a crack, a lateral crack that runs the whole length, like you have two halves, right? And you glue it back together, the Mishnah says, pasul. Rashi says, what does it mean? Vidibko, bedebek, shekorin, what's that word?
Glued.
Meaning glue. Pasul, dehavale kishnei shofot. V'dibek shivrei. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's the second. That second. That actually on the second pasul. Dibek shivrei shofrot pasul. If your shofar is cracked this way, not laterally, but what's the opposite of laterally? Right. As your shofar is like sliced like this, and you glue it back together, it's pasul. Rashi says because it's like blowing two shofrot.
Is the same thing?
Apparently. But we'll see. Nikev vistamo, if it's got a hole and you plug it up, im ma'akev etatkia pasul. What does it mean, im ma'akev etatkia? Well, it can't mean if it prevents you from blowing on the shofar. Why? Right. Pasul. The imlav kasher. So you want to say that im ma'akev means if the hole prevents it.
But if the hole, you know, if the hole prevents it, even if once you plugged it up, you can still make the sound, if the hole wouldn't prevent it, is that
how you... That's what Shalom wants to say.
If with the hole, doesn't make a sound. Plug it up, it makes a sound.
It's possible.
Right. What's another possibility?
Then make the sound, then comes the instrument. You change the sound by blocking the hole or not, comes the instrument.
No. It means to block it up by patching it. Not in other words, it's not like a flute where you put your finger over the hole and
the hole or the seal.
Whether it's the hole or the seal. Right? In other words, if it's the hole, with the hole, if it's ma'akev, if there's a hole and it doesn't blow, right,
all the, plug it up, it's
possible. Right? And then you plug it up, and even when you plug it up, it can now make the sound, so nevertheless it's pasul. Or it might mean that if it has a hole and you plug it up and the plug is ma'akev, so then it's pasul.
But the plug is ma'akev means what? It doesn't make the proper sound?
Right, so in other words, it can't mean that it doesn't make any sound at all.
Right.
Because that's obvious it's pasul. No, so ma'akev doesn't just mean it prevents you from blowing it. It prevents a...
proper tekiah.
Well, a sound... Well, and if it prevents a proper tekiah, so then
it's obvious.
Then obvious. Right. In other words, if you blow on the shofar, and as you know that there are nicer balei tekiah and there are less nice balei tekiah. And a nicer shofrot and then a less nice shofrot. And you know that there's some tekiot that come out that sound like it's mamish perfect. There's some tekiot that sound a little.
You're being kind.
But it still could still be, as long as it's still be kasher, even if it's not the best tekiah in the world. But if you blow and only out comes... Were you Yotze? No. Because that's not even a tekiah. That's just air passing through. So that's what happens when you have a hole. That's why in a wind instrument, in like a flute or a chalil, or a chalilit, right? Moving your fingers over the holes changes the tone. So in other words, a ma'akev might mean it changes the sound. Right? It changes the sound in a, let's say, a distinguished way.
But the sound is still kosher.
In other words, it could be that you're able to form what otherwise sounds like a kosher sound, but because of the patch, the quality of the sound has been
changed. Right, but it must be that sound, had it not been a question of a whole damn flood, would have been kosher.
Right. Because if it wasn't, then I'm not allowed to bear.
Right.
I don't know who this question is, but it says that.
Yeah, you have to talk up.
I don't know who this explanation is, but it says that with the hula or with the plug, you get your sound. It sounds different. It sounds different when it's plugged up. That's not for sure.
Right.
So the sound would be the same, would be right?
If the sound would be exactly the same, if the patched hole sounds exactly as the shofar would have before the hole, so then it would be kosher.
Or, in other words, if a sound comes out and it's still kosher, the quality is okay, then it's different. Why would it be psul?
In other words, I can blow a... In other words, what's the psul? Is it a psul in the coal or in the shofar? Right? In other words, when does a shofar stop being a shofar? Like we have a shear, we're about to see it in a moment. There's a shear for the length of the shofar. The shofar is shorter than that shi'ur, and you can still blow a nice sounding note from it. What's the halacha? Why? Because it's not a shofar. Right? It doesn't meet the halachic criteria of what a shofar is. So a shofar with a hole in it is similarly not a shofar.
Wouldn't depend where the hole is.
A shofar, because anywhere you put a hole is going to affect the sound.
How could it sound as well?
It's possible. This shofar is obviously longer than required. Right? You can see, sometimes you can see like very small shofar, like about this long. I've never seen a shofar much shorter than about this. Right, but you can find such things. So it's possible that if the hole is on the part of the shofar which is beyond what the shear is, so then that's less problematic. Because anyway, if you have a hole here, well, in all cases you could cut the shofar here and it would still be kosher l'chol ha'dayot. But so maybe that's, and also presumably a hole here closer to the mouthpiece is going to have a more profound effect than a hole here close to the end.
All these things are also dependent on the size of the hole.
On the size of the hole. Like how big is a nikiv? Pretty small, I think.
Yeah, I would imagine that it would
not be big enough to change the sound.
I mean, you know, the size of a needle, probably wouldn't even notice it. But let's say the size of a drill bit, that's nikiv.
Depends on what size drill bit.
An average size drill bit.
But it seems that what he's saying here is that it depends on the sound. That if the hole was plugged up in such a manner that the sound was restored to its original sound, then it would be kosher.
Right. Well, that's exactly what the Mishnah says.
It's the question, if you have a hole that doesn't affect the sound...
No, it doesn't matter. In other words,
it's still a hole.
And objectively, it means it's pasul.
If you have a hole, let's say, at the end of the shofar, it doesn't affect anything, and it's so far...
Well, that's what I just said. About that, there seems to be a machlokas, whether the disqualifying hole has to be on the length of the shofar from the mouthpiece, which is the minimum shear, or if it's anywhere on the shofar. So if you have one of these like long antelope, whatever it is, shofarot, what kind of animal is that from? I don't know.
Carnera.
Yeah, but no. But it's like when you see these people have like these long, squirrely shofarot.
Sorry.
We rely on you for this type of knowledge.
But surely, if you can just cut off where the hole is, if it's long enough, it wouldn't be a problem. Because you can cut off anyway.
Okay. That's what I just said. Yeah. No.
No, but you can cut off, so it doesn't matter if it's got a hole or not, because theoretically you can cut it off and it's still close to shofar.
No. In other words, it could be that if the hole is here near the end,
you just cut off that end.
Long past whatever, and you cut it off, so now it's kosher l'chol ha'dayot.
But because it's
a... But it's possible that if you have a shofar, there is a shita, because if you have a shofar that's 3 feet long, and you have a hole all the way at the far end, right? That it's still puzzle, because we look at the cheft, so we look at the object. How much of this object is a shofar? Right?
From there to there.
No. Well, I guess that's a machlokes, right?
It's malachic.
Is it from here? We all agree that the shofar begins here at the mouthpiece.
Right.
So do we say that halachically we imagine the shofar ends here after you've passed the minimum she'ur? Or do we say it doesn't matter how long it is? Right? In other words, objectively, the whole thing is the shofar. And even though you have a shofar that's larger than any shita requires, the whole thing is your shofar. Kol od, you're blowing this instrument, if it has a hole at any place on it, the whole thing, pardon the pun, the whole thing is pasul. You don't need to have a shofar that long. If you have a hole here near the end, you can easily fix it by sawing off the end, and you still have an extra couple inches more than you need. But as long as there's a hole, it would be posel, the whole, pardon the pun, the whole object.
Makes sense.
Hadassim. Hadassim. So hadassim can have, you know, sometimes they have those berries on them. So for the hadassim, for the lulav, you're not supposed to have the berries. At least not too many. So you can pick them off. Right? So what if you have hadassim? Hadassim have to be 3 tefachim, right? About this tall. All of our hadassim are much... You can't find hadassim that short. Unless you go and cut them from your bush yourself, you cannot buy hadassim that are too short. They just simply don't sell them. Right? Even they sell them, they're bigger than the Chazon Ish hadassim. Right? You go to the, when you go to the shuk, and there's those guys with the, they go with the magnifying glasses and the jeweler's, what do they call that? A jeweler's loop. Right? To look at the esrig. And then they go, they have these, you know, these halachic tape measures. You ever see these? They're halachic tape measures that measure the shiurim according to, you can find out how big a tefach is for Chazon Ish, how big a tefach is for Rav Chaim Noe, right? You know, like our tape measures, one side is inches and one side is centimeters, right? So they have these halachic tape measures, one side is Chazon Ish, Tfachim, Amos, whatever it is, and the other is of Chaim Noel, who's the Mekel Shita. So you can go, you measure. It's like ridiculous.
Does the Ebishter laugh when you notice?
The Ebishter takes simcha that the Jews love doing mitzvahs.
The who?
The Ebishter, the one upstairs.
The Jews, that they're doing mitzvahs.
The Kadosh Baruch Hu. Tate. Right. But in other words, no, it's ridiculous not because people are doing this. It's ridiculous because it's impossible to find hadassim that are shorter than the shiur. They just simply don't sell them. But if you have hadassim that are this big and they have berries on them, right, the berries can posel the hadassim. Right? So, put your hands up. So let's say this is your hadassim, right? So let's say all of the berries are down here, right? If I cut the hadassim here, right, I still have more hadassim than I need, a shear that's bigger than I need, right? But kol od, this is the hadassim that I bring, I look at the entirety of the thing, right, and what I have down here can be posel, everything, right?
But if you would cut it off...
If I cut it off, I'd be done.
Halachically, what is the halacha of that? Is that the halachic thing? You look at the whole thing, or do you have to be...
You look at the whole thing.
You do, okay.
Yeah.
It's like anything else. Like, you wouldn't put... Whatever, yeah.
But you wouldn't serve, like, you know, a piece of meat that's rotten on somebody's plate. But if you cut off the rotten part and you put it on their plate, it's fine. But you, like, you look at the whole thing.
Right.
I'm not sure.
I'll still
talk to the
barbecue. Yeah, but you don't know what it only matters what arrives on your plate.
Right. Yeah, well, he's talking about putting on the plate.
Right. What happens in the kitchen, it's better you don't know.
Okay.
But let me just understand. With the Hadassim, if you got something that's way, way taller than the shear to begin with, and you have a puzzle part on the area that's above the necessary amount, you cut it off, and you've got a kosher Hadass.
That's what I just said.
I'm asking. This is what
if this is the Hadassim, look, you can't cut off the top, because Niktam Rosho is puzzle.
Right.
In other words, you with the Hadassim,
you can't, but you've got a branch that's got some berries.
But you have a whole branch. And all the things that are posel towards the bottom.
Right.
Right? But if there's no berries at the top, if I cut it off here, right, then I still have more than enough shiur here. I've gotten rid of the posel parts. V'shalom al Yisrael. We saw this, the Gemara had earlier quoted this Mishnah. If you blow the shofar into a barrel or a drum or a jug, im kol shofar shama yatsa. If you hear the shofar itself, you yotze. Im kol havarash shama lo yatsa. But if what you hear is the echo that's echoing from the drum, so then you are not yotze. V'chein mi shehaya over achurei beit hakneset, o shehaya beito samuch leveit hakneset, v'shama kol shofar o kol megillah. So if you happen to be passing by, in other words, this is the sugya of mitzvot tzvichot kavana, mitzvot einan tzvichot kavana. It's a very well-known sugya, which we have discussed many, many times over the years. If by accident you hear the shofar, or you hear the megillah,
and shofar is one of the classes.
Right, because you happen to be... What?
And shofar is one of the classes.
Shofar is the quayet from this case. Right? You're walking...
In my house, I hear shofar blowing four times in the morning. Because of where I am, Samudle, because we daven in the school. The school is across the street from my house. So there's four different minyanim in the morning. Like there's the Vatikin, and every time they finish daven, they blow shofar. So I hear shofar four times in the morning.
Right, so that only works. You know, this morning is just a minug. You don't have to be yotze.
Yeah,
you have to have kavana. But yes. But if I look, it happens. It happens every year. I never daven at the vasikin. You know, there's a vasikin minyan here on Rosh Hashanah. So usually when I'm coming to shul on Rosh Hashanah morning, you're walking up the hill here, and they're up to tkiyah shofar of either the tkiyot at the end or the tkiyot of chazar sashatz for Musaf. Right. So I always have anti kavana. I say I'm over achurei beit hakneset. But it's exactly the case of the Mishnah. So I say I'm not being yotze by hearing this tekiah, because I don't yet want to be yotze. I want to be yotze when I say the bracha. So im kivein libo yotze v'im lav lo yotze. In other words, you go to shul, right? A normal person goes to shul. And after they read the Torah, they do tekiah shofar. And the rabbi gets up and says, tekiah shofar is a mitzvah, and everyone should have kavana, and the Baal Tokeh is going to say the brachos, and you should say amen, and you shouldn't say baruch or baruch shmo. Right? I always wonder, like, do you have to keep saying, like, who doesn't know this? Right? That we make these announcements in all cases. And you should be careful not to talk until the end of the last 100 kolos in a couple hours from now. And if you have children, you should keep them quiet. They shouldn't disturb anyone. Blah, 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 blah. So then you say a bracha. What's the bracha do? You know that if you don't say a bracha, you're still yotze the mitzvah. We say, brachot einan ma'akvot. As the Torah said, do a mitzvah. Chazal said, before you do a mitzvah, we're going to give you another mitzvah. You say a bracha. What's the purpose of the bracha?
What happens if you learn in the morning before you said Birchot HaTorah?
Birchot HaTorah, it might be a different case, because Birchot HaTorah might be
D'oraisa.
Okay. But you shouldn't. One should be very careful. One should be very careful to say Birkat HaTorah before that. You know, like it happens a lot. Like I can't tell you how many times it happens that, you know, I don't always get to shul. This morning I didn't get to shul on time. But it's not because I was staying in bed. I'd been up for an hour and a half before shul. But I have the tzar gidl bonim alai. I have to get the kids dressed and out and sandwiches made and everything else in the morning. So your kid has the chumash homework he didn't finish, and he's finishing it over the Cheerios and while you're making the chumash sandwich, and he needs your help. You should say Birkas HaTorah, right? You shouldn't engage in that before. I mean, generally speaking, we get out of bed, we run right to shul. But that's what a Jew does. But if on any occasion you wake up and it's going to be a delay until you get to shul for whatever reason, because you woke up early or for whatever reason, you should probably say Birkas. You should first of all wash the Tehillat Sidayim and say Birkas, you know, Tehillat Sidayim and Asher Yotzer and Elokai Neshama. And you should probably say Birkas HaShachar and Birkas HaTorah at that point. Because you're starting your day already, and then you get to shul and you're ahead of the game. But
that's why most minyanim here start with Rabbi Shmuel Omer.
Look, it's a curiosity. Sorry. This very widespread minyan in Eretz Yisrael that the minyanim all start with Rabbi Shmuel.
I don't really quite understand if somebody runs through the door and immediately.
Yeah, I don't know if you and the shul here starts at 7:40. Meaning 7:40, they're saying Rabbi Shmuel Omer. So if you show up at 7:40, until you put your talis on, talis and tefillin on, right, you're already missed half of Psukei Dezimra. Forget talis, tefillin, and brachos, and karbonos, and etc. Right? It's a serious problem. I don't know how this, you know, this is the very widespread minhag here in Eretz Yisrael. It's not like that in America.
I don't see why it's a problem, though.
It's a problem.
If you know about it,
yes,
come at 7:30.
Right. The idea is that everyone should know how much time they need for Hanochas Tefillin and Atimfas Talis and Brachas and Karbonos and 7:40, so you know you need to get there T minus X minutes before it. But in reality, psychologically, 7:40.
You know when, as they say, the expression is Nofela Simon?
Yeah.
First time you become an auto.
I know, but even there, you see people run through the door. They opt them to be in the shul.
They say
that's immediately, you know, they're walking. They barely.
You have people that walking after your shabbat also.
You can't look. You can't.
No, I'm talking about the shliach tzibur.
I'm not being judgmental. I'm just saying it's a.
I'm not being judgmental. I'm asking. I don't know.
When I go to America, and I go to shul, they say davening starts at 7:00.
They start with breakfast.
You get there. They don't get up the Baruch Shomar until if Davening starts at 7:00. They don't get up the Baruch Shomar until 7:15. So it's in the other extreme. It seems
you've got a reel from places.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So kavana. So brachos are a rabbinic enactment to because the Torah side.
Okay.
Brachos are a rabbinic enactment. If you do a bracha, if you do a mitzvah without saying the bracha, we say bracha tenen makvot. The absence of the bracha does not prevent the fulfillment of the mitzvah. Right?
Right.
And this is why we have the problem with the lulav and esrog. Steve, if you were here, we would make reference to you. What do we all do with our esrog? We put it upside down. Right? We hold it upside down.
All right, so
you hold it upside down because you can't be yotzei the mitzvah if you're holding the esrog upside down. The pitam, the spitz, has to be facing up. So we hold it upside down.
Not there,
so you can't be yotzei because as soon as you pick it up, you'd fulfill the mitzvah. And since you want to hold it when you say the bracha, you don't want to yet have fulfilled the mitzvah, because once you've fulfilled the mitzvah, you can't say the bracha. So you hold it upside down, you say the bracha, and then you turn it right side up, and the moment you turn it right side up, the mitzvah meter starts ticking. You were yotze, you get the check mark. Steve will tell you that his minog, his father told him when he was a kid, no, you don't need to do this whole thing with turning it upside down. You just have kavana that you're not being yotze. Because regardless of the machlokas about mitzvot srichot kavana, mitzvot eran srichot kavana, whether or not
anti kavana works,
everyone agrees that anti kavana is a monkey wrench. If you say I'm picking up this esrog right side up, but I am not being mekayim the mitzvah, you're not mekayim the mitzvah. So women do that. Well, that's not exactly the case. Women generally speak, that's a separate sugya about when Shabbat begins. Everyone agrees that Shabbat begins, for simplicity's sake, let's say Shabbat begins at sunset. And let's say we all agree on when sunset is. Let's imagine for a second that sunset is exactly at 7 o'clock. So if you do malacha after 7 o'clock, no matter what you've done before, you've violated Shabbat. But we don't wait until sunset to light candles. We light candles 18 minutes before, or 40 minutes before, is the minhag in Yerushalayim. Both because there's the idea of Tosefet Shabbat, but also because since you can't know, even us with our phones and our computers, you know, and we can calculate it down to the fraction of a second, we can never be so precise. Certainly in the days of old, they want to add a little buffer to make sure that you don't run over. So when are you Mekabel Shabbat? You go to shul, you daven mincha. Is it Shabbat yet? No, obviously not. So it's a three-way machlokas, and all three opinions are brought in the Shulchan Aruch. One opinion is Mizmor Shir Liyom. One opinion is Lechadodi, when you turn around and you say Boikala, Boikala. The other opinion is Mizmor Shir Liyom Shabbat. The third opinion is Baruch Hu. Now, in reality, in any shul that we do, unless you're making early Shabbat in the summer, which is almost coming to an end, by the time you get it, what's the earliest of those three shitot? Lichadodi.
Theoretically.
What do you mean theoretically?
Not always.
Why?
It depends. If you have somebody davening Karlebach, Lichadodi could...
No, but otherwise it's still the same.
Relative to the others,
Lichadodi. The earliest of those three shitot that you're going to encounter in the davening is Lichadodi. So in any shul that we daven in, by the time you get up to Lichadodi, it's already past Shkia. So when did Shabbat start for you?
With Shkia.
With Shkia. Which means you were not Mekayim Tosefet Shabbat. Which is a problem. Which is why at the end of Mincha, while it's still a couple minutes, usually the way in our shul we're actually better than some other shuls. We daven Mincha a couple minutes earlier than some of the other neighborhood shuls. So that you finish, there's some shuls that by the time you're done with mincha, it's already up to Shkia. Right?
Or after.
Or even after, which is not proper even during the week. So after mincha, I always say, Hare Kedushat Shabbat Alai.
For Tosefet Shabbat.
So that I am Mekayim Tosefet Shabbat. Right? And this is the proper thing to do. In some shuls, if you ever go to Ol Nechama in Yerushalayim, they sing that old niggin, Ilu Hayali Koyach, Hayiti Yotzel Lashuk, Hayiti Machriz V'Yomer Shabbat Hayom Lashuk. So I think that minug to sing that song is also a form of God. But in other words, just singing that song without kavona, that you're being Mekabel Shabbat, I don't think somebody would.
But you're making the statement Shabbat Hayom.
Well, in other words, I'm not sure that it's qualified. And as if somebody, if it's still
if
before Shkia,
on a Tuesday,
if it, no, obviously, Choladeh, if you light candles and you make Kiddush on Tuesday, it's not Shabbos. In other words, but if somebody sang that song, and it's if they were ahead of the game, as they sing that song also when they make early Shabbat. So if somebody sang that
song
and he realizes he still has to do malacha,
whether he can or not,
he could probably still do it. But as somebody, you should proactively be Mekabel Shabbat before it's the Shkia. Because if you wait for Lichadodi, or certainly Mizmor Shir, you miss out on Tosefet Shabbat. When does a woman Mekabel at Shabbat? So we say, generally speaking, with Hadlakat Neirot, which is a bit before, right? She's lighting candles, you're already going off to... This is one of the reasons when we moved to Efrat, I was insistent that we continue to light candles at the Yerushalayim time, which is 40 minutes before. When we lived in Yerushalayim, we used to light at the Yerushalayim time, which is 40. Why Yerushalayim is 40 minutes before? That's the minog, is an interesting story. It has something to do with the sheet of the Ramban. And anyway, it's not for now. But 40 minutes earlier, because if you as a man like to be at home when your wife is lighting candles, which I like to be, because there's always like some last minute thing,
which otherwise got forgot.
Right? And you want to be there, make sure everything is, you know, I don't like it like when the matches are left out on the table where she lit candles. So if you want to be home at candle lighting and also be in shul on time, if she lights at 18 minutes, you really can't do it. But if she lights at 40 minutes and then you leave the house, you have time to walk slowly to shul and to be one of the first people in shul for mincha and benachas ruach, se ashrei yoshvei
ve'secho. You have time to put your tefillin on.
You'd fill in for Mincha on Friday, yeah. So when a woman is mekabel, but if a woman, if so brachot enon makfor, if a woman lights candles without saying the bracha for some reason, there are plenty of people. This is the case, right? You know, Chabad is. I have a non-Jewish friend. I went to public high school, as you know. So I have a woman. Who I went to high school with, who I was quite friendly with in high school. And in the age of Facebook, we reconnected. She lives in Crown Heights. She's not religious. I mean, she's not Jewish.
It's funny to end up in Crown Heights.
So I was in New York the year before last. And we got together for a cup of coffee. And After we were done, I was driving someplace, and she was going in the same direction, so I was driving her. We were stuck in cross-town traffic. Bumper to bumper, it wasn't moving. And the coffee that I had had an hour ago was doing its thing. And I desperately had to go to the bathroom. And I see we're somewhere on the east side of Manhattan, in the 70s and the 80s, I don't remember. And the car is not moving. But I look out the window and I see on the storefront Chabad of the East Side. So I said to her, "Listen, I'm going into Chabad. If the traffic opens up, you get in the driver's seat and move forward, and I'll catch up to you." So I go, I have a little hispoididus. I come out, I get back in the car, we haven't moved. She says to me, "What's Chabad?"
Oh no, she doesn't
count. So I said, Chabad is a place where any Jew can go if he needs to go to the bathroom. So she says to me, "So why are they always giving me candles on Friday?"
Oh, no.
She comes home on Friday off the subway. There's a guy handing out candles. There's plenty of people that light the candles and don't know the bracha.
Right.
They're Yotze. They're 100% Yotze. Hadlakas
Neirot. She must have quite a collection of candles.
Yeah, she's got all the tea lamps in the world. So anyway, we're off track.
Not much.
So when a woman...
I used the bathroom at Chabad in Budapest, it's true.
Oh, yeah. So when a woman lights candles, she's mekabelet Shabbat. Right? But what if she doesn't want to be mekabelet Shabbat? What if she wants to drive to shul? So she can do it on tonight, that she's lighting the candles, but she's not being mekabelet Shabbat. Right? That she's not being mekabelet Shabbat. But that's not connected to brachot enan ma'akvot. Right? There's a separate problem of over la asiatan. Yes, this is familiar to you? Generally speaking, we do the mitzvah, we say the bracha before you do the mitzvah. Because after all, this is how we got off track. Why did Chazal make brachot? What is the purpose of a bracha?
to give us some opportunity to actually have kavana before we do.
It's a declaration of kavana. This act that I'm about to do.
Otherwise, the act is just.
This act that I'm about to do is a mitzvah. Right? Could you imagine somebody going and it not being a mitzvah? They're not wanting to do a mitzvah? Yeah. You know when that just happened? A second ago when I just did it. So, in order, even though we say brachot, mitzvot enat tzrichot kavana, you need to have two things. The absence of anti-kavana and a minimum awareness that what you are doing is in fact a mitzvah. But if you think this is a kazoo, or you think today's date is not the first day of Tishrei, you think it's the middle of Kislev, can you be Yotzei? Why?
Because there's not even the minimal knowledge.
Because there's not even minimal knowledge that you're doing a mitzvah. Right? If you're sitting out in your backyard and you're enjoying a nice sandwich, are you mekayim the mitzvah? So you didn't even know that you were in the sukkah. You thought you were under the pergola. Right?
You didn't know that the sandwich had matzah and it was full of more pesach.
Even better. Right? So that's the kind of... So when we say mitzvot enan tzrichot kavana, right, it means you don't need to have like lofty Kabbalistic ideas. Right? You just need to be minimally aware that this is a mitzvah and today I am chayav. And what do we say in the bracha? Asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu X, Y, and Z. I'm making a declaration that this is a mitzvah and I am chayav.
And that doesn't work with an avira. An avira you do regardless.
It doesn't
work with an avira.
If you do an avira,
regardless of your kavanah, it's an avira.
No. In other words,
there is a category called
mitasek. In other words, if I'm shogeg,
no.
Shogeg means I forgot it was usur, or I forgot it's Shabbat. Fill in here the blank of the famous joke. In Volozhin, in the days when not every yeshiva bachur was still so frum because of the influence of the Haskalah, but they were still, you know, that's like Bialik said. Like, it's one thing to be an apikoris, it's another thing to be an amharetz, right? An apikoris maybe, but an amharetz never. So, you know, guys are sitting in Volozhin, they're smoking on Shabbos. And the Rebbe walks by, sees them smoking, and once says, "Oh, Rebbe, you know, it's like a case of like a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing." Everyone's a chokmalog. "Oh, Rebbe, I'm sorry. I forgot it was Shabbos." And he says, "Oh, Rebbe, I'm sorry, I forgot it was Usser." And this third one says, "Rebbe, I'm sorry, I forgot to pull down the window shade." So that's shogeg, right? You forgot it was Shabbos, you forgot it was Usser. But if the two of us are playing tag or something on Shabbos, right? And he, while he's like flailing around trying to catch the frisbee, he knocks into the light switch and turns it off or on. That's not even shogeg. He knows it's Shabbos. He knows it's usur. But what? He was mitasek. He was busy. He was preoccupied. He was fooling around doing something else. And toch kedei, he managed to turn the light off or on. Right? But that doesn't make it. That's even less than shogeg. And that's true also. Just like mitasek is enough to get you off the hook in an avera. It's the same thing to avoid a mitzvah. And this is the case. I mean, we've learned this so many times. What's the case? If you've been following along all these years, what's the next thing I'm about to say?
I haven't been here that many years.
David, you're in the sukkah. You know it's sukkahs, and a bird flies into the sukkah. So you grab a broom, and you start chasing the bird out of the sukkah. But it turned out it wasn't a broom.
It was a lulav.
It was a lulav and esrig. Right?
Lulav and etrog.
Right?
Okay. All our revenue.
And it was upside up.
In other words, by accident...
No, it no problem.
No, it's possible even by accident to do a mitzvah. right? Through mitasek.
In that case, you're not.
You weren't. Well, exactly. You were. No, it's possible by accident to do a mitzvah action,
but it's not.
But not.
It's not the same as walking by and hearing the shofar. Oh, it's shofar. So, you know.
Okay, so let's go back to the Mishnah.
That's only because, the shofar is hearing. There's no action.
You started to say about
conceptually, it's very similar to it.
And the bracha is not makev, so why does it matter if you're mafsik?
Passing by
an hour later?
The hefsek is not because of the bracha.
He thought it was a trumpet.
Even though we say bracha tena makvot, the din of the brachot is that you should say the mitzvah without being mafsik. But that's something else. Because we say midrabanan, according to the minhag that we have 100 kolot,
I don't see any reason why not.
It's all one long extended mitzvah. So ideally, this is how we have this chumrah of not talking from the first to the 100th shofar.
And if you did talk, you still made the bracha.
Absolutely. It's a chumrah that we have become popular of late. But everyone
after the first shloshim,
everyone agrees that you yotz. Yeah, yeah. Even during the first shloshim, if somebody spoke.
We got it on tape. You said you can talk.
No, I didn't say you shouldn't talk. But if somebody during the first Shloshim said something, we wouldn't say you have to go back to the beginning. Right? As long as you heard the Tekiah. Anyway, go back to the Mishnah. We got nothing done tonight. So, im kiven libo, yatsa v'im lav, lo yatsa afal pi shezeh shama v'zeh shama, zeh kiven libo v'zeh lo kiven libo. You can have two people walking down the street and they have the same auditory experience, but one thinks he's hearing the shofar, he has kavana, and the other one thinks, what's the Gemara going to say? What does he think he hears? What?
An echo.
No, he thinks he hears a dog barking. Right? He thinks he hears a dog barking. Right? No, so you're not in shul. Right?
You could make a lot of money if you had a dog that barked like that.
I guess. But maybe he's like a Shver Bal Tokei. Okay, we learned one Mishnah, which is not very good on Erev.
More than one Mishnah. You went through the whole sugya of
Mitzvot. Okay, so we'll
and what time Shabbos starts?
We'll end here.
Go back a minute to the woman lighting candles.
Yeah.
So, theoretically, halachically, it would be preferable for her to have
anti-corona,
make the bracha, and then
I declare. This is we got off track here. This is the issue of over la asiyatan. Generally speaking, mitzvot, brachot are recited prior to the mitzvah because they are the declaration of kavana. I am about to blow shofar. What I'm about to do is a mitzvah. I'm about to blow shofar. I'm about to put on talis. I'm about to put on tefillin. I'm about to bang a mezuzah into the wall. The problem is when a woman says the bracha lahadlik ner shel Shabbat. Any verbal declaration of Shabbat is kabbalat Shabbat. So when she says Shabbat, for her it's Shabbat. Now it's also for her to light the candle.
And she lights it beforehand, she's got the same problem.
So if she lights it beforehand, we say brachot ein makvot. If you do the mitzvah without saying the bracha, you don't have to say the bracha. So that's how this custom has it. She lights it, but she doesn't look at it. She covers it, and then she does the thing with the hands. Right, so it's kind of splitting the difference, but it's also possible.
There's also a different psak between Ashkenazim and Sephardim.
Yes, this
she
is correct.
She wants to go in the car afterwards.
Then in all cases, yeah. So if she makes the tanai, if she's not being mekabel at Shabbat, or by the way, Anyantif, when she lights Anyantif, when there's no problem of lighting Anyantif, then the laws of Over La Siatan do apply, and she should say the bracha first and then light. By the way, this idea that a woman automatically, unless she makes a tanai, a woman automatically is mekabel at Shabbat with hadlakat nerot, does not apply to men. there are men who light candles if they live alone. If your wife's away,
so he doesn't need a covenant.
So he doesn't need to because the assumption is that he's still going off to daven mincha. So it's obvious that he's not being.
It's an assumed anti-kavanah
that he's not being mekabel shabbat.